So hello, we are here in Johannesburg with the artist and musician Robert Matshiri, 36 years old man coming from Zimbabwe and living in Johannesburg. He's a painter and a musician, drummer, singer, among other instruments, and he's also a graphic designer. We are here together, Rob, to speak about your work and the way you are doing painting and also drawings, if I remember well, and music. Perhaps we can start with what brings you to art from the very beginning.
Okay. I'm not sure if I have an answer for that, a definite answer for that, because I think art is something that probably finds you, you know? You just find yourself somehow doing, making things like an artist, thinking like an artist, living like an artist. In the way that you think, in the way that you look at things, in the way that you want to talk about the things, and share your perception of life or your idea of life with people. Yeah. And then at a certain point decide that that is what is going to be your profession. Yes. Painting is, I don't know, there's something. I think it's because painting is linked to the most natural of marks, you know, in communication. It's, you know, in respect to how we use our hands to create marks, you know. I think it starts with how we mark on the ground, in the sand, I suppose, and then, you know, I think in the history of mankind we find ourselves looking for other things like pigments, you know, and the first thing we do with those things is to find a way to make marks and eventually actually paint and make pictures, images. Some kind of representation of some sort. So it's one of those, I think, mediums that I think naturally I come from a very almost conservative, you know, place in Zimbabwe, because I think art is largely something that comes from you're self-taught. Normally you teach yourself to be an artist, you know, because of, I think it's not really formalized, it's not, there's no strong presence of art education and generally in schooling and academics and institutions. So it's normally a skill, you know. So that's why, you know, most artists from Zimbabwe are good painters, good sculptors, because it's very skill based. You know, it's performative in that sense that it's about, you know, making things, objects. So, and painting is one of those, you know, mediums that are very important. So from when I went to study for 3 years, it was mainly those things like painting, drawing, ceramics, textiles, you know, with a little bit of theory. You know, so that's where my love for painting is, the dominance of painting in my practice comes from. So sound now comes from the music side of things, because through being an artist, and I think being, you know, think because of my line of thinking, which is very critical in the sense that you just go beyond the thing, what it is, the medium or the art form, you know. So beyond just music being for entertainment or, you know, in as form, we look at it from a melodic, as in patterns. Being an artist, as being a painter, has now, you know, inspired me to also want to use music in the sense of like a sound, purely a sound. And that leads me to other sounds, you know, other things that can make sounds. Yeah, so, you know, our environment and languages and all that. But Mbila primarily right now is what I'm interested in, because it's I think it's an instrument that carries a very broad or comprehensive archive, probably, of how Shonas, you know, perceive sound. I mean, Shona is the tribal group that I grew amongst, but you know, I'm not really Shona at all. You know, I might be mixed, but you know, the Shonas being touched Mbira. Oh, Mbira is it's a lamella form in the classes of in instrument classes. It's made out of tongues, or what they call lamella, that are normally fixed onto a board. So you basically pluck these lamella forms to make a sound. Very similar to the way you, almost similar to the way you strike a guitar, but then you press them down almost as if you are plucking, and when you release, that makes the sound, you know. And I think traditionally, back in the days before ever, it's a very old instrument, over 1,000 years. And I think the first ones were made out of bamboo. They used bamboo to make the tongues. Mm-hmm. But now people use metal, you know. So it's this very sharp sound, like boom, boom, sound. So the ones in the Shona ones vary. I mean, the keys, I think, is beyond from something as small as a 7 key to 20. But broadly, like speaking of the whole, I think, class of Mbiras that you find in Africa, is you're talking, and elsewhere in the Caribbean, I think from 7 to even 37 keys. Or beyond, you know, it depends on the artist. People are known to fix whatever number of keys they fix onto these things. And with use of any scale that you want, whether it's pentatonic, hexatonic, I mean, they differ according to tribe. Yeah. But Shonas are very traditionally, I think they have a very prominent history archive of tunes. I mean, apparently it's only because it's popular because the Shonas uphold it, you know, which is in an outstanding way compared to how other tribes around, because apparently you find it everywhere in Southern Africa and Angola. You know, I don't know about South Africa. I think South Africa only Limpopo. But there are, you know, a lot of tribes in Africa, they have lamella form in, yeah, these instruments.
And you just went to Zimbabwe, no? Do some some recording.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how, but you already say a bit like what brings you there, but if you can say more about what brings you there. You are doing a lot of recording of this instrument.
I went to do some interviews and some field recordings of the people that still practice. Which I mean, there's a district called Mondoro, which is about 110 km south of Harare. There's a very strong presence of Mbira practices, traditional Mbira practices. So I connected with one player who lives in Joburg, who's from that area. So he's the one who took me on that trip, and I just had a field day with them, listening and recording them playing and knowing more about the family. Because I think it's through, you know, it's generational knowledge normally in Bira, it's passed down the line. And I think it's, if you want to know the real narrative, the real story about Mbiras, we have to somehow, you know, have some kind of contact with the people down there, because those are the people that know the real authentic. Yeah. Once it leaves those spaces, it becomes something else.
And they are playing this instrument for parties, weddings, funerals?
Normally...
Oh, it's like...
It's...
Concert, like...
I think it's still very... Like in traditional spaces, it's still very attached to ritual, you know, even though you find commercial Mbira players, groups or families playing, they go out, play at parties and other events, you know, and they get paid for that. But it's, I think, predominantly used for rituals, you know. Yeah. And that's why it has taken, I think, a while for people to, for secular, you know, I think, society to really accept, because there's that stigma attached to it, that it's ancestral worship. And since African tradition is something that has been demonized, it's then, you know, people don't want anything to do with the instrument because they believe that it's connected to, you know, it's changing slowly. It's becoming, there's a lot of coolness attached to it right now. So people are accepting it, you know. It's this now tribal, amazing sound instrument that everybody wants to, like, get hold of and teach their kids, because it's cool to have, you know, kids that have... a little bit of knowledge about their own tradition, about this ethnic history of ours, you know. Yeah, so it's slowly changing. And there are people that are working towards putting it into schools. And some are even trying to institutionalize the instrument, you know, and the music itself. So, yeah, interesting things happening in Bira.
And, Rob, I know that you invited us to go to a concert later, to 2 days of the Zimbabwean musician,
yes.
Thomas Mapfumo.
Yes.
And you also told me that he was a great reference for you, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, Thomas Mapfumo, man, he's an epic legend, this guy, because he is... He's just as legendary, I think, as the name that he adopted for his music. It's called Chimurenga music, and it's a fusion of traditional Shona music, Mbira, and electrical instruments. It was very contemporary and very urban, but it's called Chimurenga because it's a resistance music. Yeah, it started in the 70s.
So when Zimbabwe was still under colonial,
yeah, it was for that it mm-hmm. That it came about. It was meant to be used as a tool for resistance, you know, against colonial power. And it went past 1980 and it still continued, but this time, you know, pointing at the government, the black government, you know, the corruption and all those things. I'm not sure, you know, if he's still in exile. It's in exile, he had to leave the country. Yeah. So he's very important to, and very influential to my art, you know, to my work at large, because of that. Like a very intelligent use of, or continuation of, a very strong traditional practice or art form, you know, into like a contemporary space. Yeah, it's just because it's still like it still embodies a very still the same energy that you find in Bira music, you know, in the traditional songs, you know, mm-hmm. traditional spiritual songs. Even the ones of resistance, the ones on social commentary, everything, love songs and all that, the way that he adopted it is so natural. So up to date, he's the only guy that you can only really like listen to and get some sense of what, you know, Zimbabwean traditional music is in a modern contemporary space, thinking of whatever it is, philosophy. I find the people that I think contributed to the development of that genre, that art form, the guitarists, the musicians, there's a whole, like I think, community of people that played with Thomas that are very important to the development of that, like the remix, which is why I'm interested. Like I'm using the remix, the concept of remixing as a framework to just study and look at how, you know, we exchange in the traditional sense underneath the underground, underneath the, these archives, the Western archives, the ones with full of European prejudices. What is happening underneath, you know? That's what I've used this the style, the framework of a remix to kind of like look at that, you know. It's interesting because remix is also saying, I think it exists in a similar historical space to ours, to this one with Chimrenga, because it's you know, the best way to go to that linear space is to go right back to photography, and then, you know, you move forward looking at how the montage started, you know, and how then the copy started, like being able to copy text and extract certain pieces of information and, you know, and copy that and multiply and then disseminate right into dub music, reggae music, the way Lee Scratch Perry used this thing of like replicating and repeating one, you know, song or with different artists and made it all communal, you know. So it's, you see that in Chimurenga, because Chimurenga takes from traditional repertoire, yeah, and it uses those things to multiply into other works. When you listen to it, it sounds the same, but if you sometimes it sounds monotonous and it sounds, but that's what it is. It's a lot of syncopation and sophisticated syncopation and polyphonic sounds, long songs and things like that. It's very chanty in a way, very spiritual and deep, you know. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you see how there's such a important archive or history, I don't like to use the word archive or history or narrative, that is underneath, you know, that I think has continued to influence everything else that happens above music or pop culture, the way we consume sound and all those things. Yeah, so, you know, the Mbira for me right now is the Mbira instrument itself and its history and everything else is something that I'm enjoying because it connects all those things. Yeah, even how reggae fits into Chimurenga a lot. Like when you look at Thomas's, you know, repertoire, you see a lot of songs that have reggae traits and it fits well together. Yeah, because of, you know, how these things are linked because of the sauce. which is Africa, you know.
Yeah.
I think very influential to have the globus in, you know, historically perceives like the sound or, you know, audio, you know. That's important, you know. It's important to be able to tell stories just through sound, you know, like to try and fool, to remove the visual part of it. How could we tell the story of like humankind?
Tell me if I'm wrong, but when I'm listening to you, when you're also talking to me about the Pungwe nights that you are doing
uh-huh.
in South Africa and in Zimbabwe also,
uh-huh.
and perhaps in Mozambique,
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having the impression that you try to concentrate all what you are saying like into also these events or.
Yeah. Pungwe nights is an attempt to solve a problem, you know, the problem of lack of platforms that where people can have this kind of discussions, where people can challenge challenge the archive, I guess, again. You know, so Pungwe nights is, Pungwe means vigil. It's a Shona word for vigil, which means like an overnight procession. Like when you wake, you know, when you stay awake, normally in the presence of music, in the space, in an environment of ritual of some sort, for a purpose, you know, for a very special purpose. So this, you see this in the war of liberation, Zimbabwe's resistance to colonial, the war, the guerrilla warfare in the bushes. These events were done for to encourage people to consult their ancestors and just to, you know, for people to express themselves, to have a space where they can also just like mobilize and all that. So we're taking that concept and using that kind of reference, yeah, in this Pungwe space where people can then, you know, think in that context, you know, of investigating and exchanging and talking, dialogue and things like that.
And remixing things also.
And remixing.
Yeah. I didn't tell you that you are a DJ also.
Oh yeah, I mean it's all falling that also. Because if you're a DJ, you I think besides being a performer, you know, you you're facilitating a space for dialogue. There's some kind of conversations that happens, you know, when you play music, because you're selecting a set of music, you're suggesting something, and you are, it's a representation in a certain, to a certain extent, because there's something that you're trying to create, you know, some kind of object, thought, you know, a situation that you are creating, besides entertaining. If there's a moment marked right there, you know. So it depends how you want to look at it, but I mean you can place it in any framework of thought, you know. So I like doing that, selecting music and seeing, you know, looking at how people respond and how it affects people in terms of memory, you know, and all that. Evoking memories and ideas and feeling. Yeah.